This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Super Extreme Vault. And on this episode, we're kind of opening up the wrestler snapshot, but this is going to be only an extreme snapshot of the one and only, the amazing LA Park. And here as always, I have Mark. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. And I just got done watching all these LA Park matches. And I don't know, I got a lot of emotion built up here. So I'm really ready to get some of this stuff out.
Mark, Glenn, you're here. Are you feeling a little queasy or are you all right?
I am feeling super, except I didn't realize we were doing this. I watched Living Dangerously.
Well, eventually.
Eventually. You're a month ahead. So.
Oh, no. I've made a horrible mistake.
Maybe next month you can watch LA Park and we'll watch Living Dangerously and we'll see how that goes.
Steven's really good at post-production editing, so I think he'll be able to work some things out where you can still talk about Living Dangerously, but by the time he gets done with it, we'll all be on the same page.
He'll take all the words that I say and he'll chop and screw them into statements about La Parca.
You guys overestimate my 2 minutes of post-edit ability, but let's start. We got LA Park here. I would say one of my top 10 favorite wrestlers of all time. Maybe a little bit lower, but up there. A guy I love, crazy brawler, amazing costume. He dances. He comes out the Thriller. He's so cool. I love him. But you guys aren't as experienced with LA Park. So I was wondering if we can just go around and say what you thought of La Parca LA Park before you started watching this stuff, Mark.
Well, I really only knew him from I knew of him. I knew that he had extensive career in Mexico, but I really had only seen his WCW stuff for the most part. So that was really I always liked the character in WCW. I was a huge WCW fan at the time that he was around, and I really enjoyed all the luchas that they brought in there. And he was kind of the most unique one to me. He really stood out just with his mannerisms, his strutting, his little chair guitar thing he does, and he was just always stood out. And one of my favorite La Parca moments from WCW is actually not even his. It's when DDP pretended to be La Parca to, I think, Diamond Cutter Randy Savage, which I love that moment. So, but yeah, La Parca was cool, but I didn't have that the kind of exposure to his matches in, you know, I guess what you might call the real La Parca, which we sure got a dose of today.
We did. His DNA splattered all over the place. But that what's really funny about that Diamond Dallas Page La Parca moment is that like DDP spent like all afternoon with La Parca trying to like get La Parca to teach him the dance and do all his mannerisms and everything, which I just can't imagine what that conversation and afternoon was like. So that's amazing. But Glenn, have you ever seen La Parca before?
I was really looking forward to the Taz match. I am not sure that I'd actually seen La Parca in a match before. I might have mentioned this when on the last podcast we said we were going to do this, but I saw a few episodes of Nitro when I had 24/7 a while back, and one of those was the one with DDP and Randy Savage in the La Parca outfit. In terms of actual La Parca matches, there might have been one on a surrounding episode that I might have seen. I might have seen him a little. He was in TNA for a little while around, like 405?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, we didn't watch a TNA La Parca match? Or did we? Because I mean, it felt like we did because that one, that six-sided ring.
Yeah. Yeah, true. We'll get there. Otherwise, this is a big old dose of La Parca and a big old dose of Lucha, which isn't something that I'd really watched before, except like once or twice right after I got an HD TV for the first time. I was flipping through to just find anything. Like, I don't know if you guys did this, but the first time I got an HD TV, it was exciting to watch anything because the picture was so good. Yeah. I just found different things to watch because everything looked great. You know, I put on like golf because, oh, wow, I can see the grass. Like, it's, oh my so God, mean. First time in my life, I can see the puck.
I did watch a ton of major shows when I first got an HGTV.
Yeah.
I bought all the stuff in Blu-ray, like just thinking, like, whoa, it's like real life. I'm like, and then not realizing I could just go outside and see real life.
Yeah, and then like in a month it wore off. But within that time, I got a Kung Fu channel at the time on my cable system. Wow. And one of the things that I found flipping around prodigiously at that time was a lucha show, which I think had X-Pac on it.
That would have been AAA, yeah.
Yeah, and they were doing the cage dome where you have to climb up out of the center.
Yeah,
like brutal. TNA did once. Yeah, because they fucked it up so bad. But yeah, that until I was watching this playlist that you, Steven, put together, that was the extent of my lucha watching as well. So a double dose for me today.
Well, yeah. And I got to say, you've seen a very, very, very small aspect of lucha. The crazy, wild, bloody brawls aren't the most common things in lucha. It's something that happens generally in the mass matches or the hair matches, and when LA Park's having big matches, and sporadically throughout. So you I would say you probably still haven't watched lucha, but we'll talk about
that. Is there anything in terms of like a bio or a history on La Parca that would be relevant before we get into the matches here?
You would think I would have researched that.
You know, I'd like to at least know about this whole La Parca becomes LA Park thing, if you have any insight.
Yeah, basically, Antonio Pena, who ran AAA, he split off from CMML in 93, and he started his own promotion, which was AAA, with like Conan as the biggest star. And he, it was akin to like Vince McMahon splitting off from the NWA and going national. So he was very competitive, and he kind of trademarked all the gimmicks, and he had his own guys in. So La Parca was a gimmick that he came up with, and, LA Park, who, I forgot what he started as, he took over the La Parca, he took the La Parca role. So he was La Parca in AAA, and then he, you know, he was in, WCW, and, Pena obviously doesn't care what they do in America, so he was La Parca. But then when he returned to Mexico, by that point, AAA had already replaced La Parca with someone else. So there was another La Parca, which was his father or his brother or something like that. And so when he returned to Mexico, he started going by LA Park. So
La Parca is just the name of a role, like the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Sure.
Did Parker start still?
Yes, I will most likely kill you in the ring.
So that was pretty much the deal. Is when he came back to Mexico.
His real name is Adolfo. I was just looking up this bio on Wikipedia since our host didn't do any research, and it says his real name is Adolfo Margarito Tapia Ibarra. That's an awesome, awesome real name.
That is
Margarito is his middle name.
That is a pretty good name. I love it. But the thing is, he went by LA Park, but he pretty much had the exact same gimmick, the exact same outfit. So there was that. He actually had a big bloody feud with the guy who took his name, LA Park. So there's these awesome bloody LA Park versus La Parca matches that you can watch too if you haven't got enough La Parca after tonight. But I thought that would be too confusing for you guys, so I canceled them.
Yeah, it would have been. There's a lot of confusion. There's enough confusion in these matches already at some point. So.
Glenn, did you have something else?
Just to clarify, does any of us speak Spanish?
No.
I'm not fluent by any means, but I can understand a good amount of Spanish, so I picked up some of the commentary along the way.
Okay, you probably had a much better idea of what was going on than I did sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I was confused at times as well, just with some of the stuff with the refs, which we'll get to. But
we'll talk about the refs.
I don't think any language would clear that confusion up.
So let's start. You know, we could watch Laparca's whole career. You know, he was not always in hardcore matches. Obviously, he was actually a really good heel, comedy, high flyer, and that kind of stuff in Mexico before he went to WCW. And in WCW, he basically had one hardcore match, and this is the one we watch. They trotted this out on a Nitro one night for no reason at all. They just said, okay, we're having a Falls Count Anywhere Mexican hardcore match with Damian Ciclope versus Laparca and Silver King. I don't know why they did this, because the announcers just made fun of them the entire time, which was very bizarre. But it's a pretty entertaining little thing. So, Glenn, what did you think?
I think that Schiavone, for some reason, really enjoyed the fact that it was Mexican.
He really did.
Like, he kept saying over and over, it's a Mexican hardcore match. If you could believe that.
Yeah, it was very racist, was it not?
A little bit. Like the way that, you know, they're doing these chair spots and trash cans, and there was a whole lot of putting a trash can over a guy's head that happened at least twice for extended periods. Laparca hit Ciclope with a chair while he was doing a suicide dive, and then Ciclope hit another suicide dive later. They were really going all out, and the announcers were giving them nothing.
Absolutely nothing. You wonder why WCW was sued for racism. So
a couple of times, if I understand correctly.
Yeah. So there was this. I wrote somewhere in my notes that this was essentially a WWF hardcore match with a bunch of dives, which it kind of felt like to me.
Yeah, it was like a WWE hardcore match with, like, sprinkled with some lucha dust.
Yeah, yeah, just a little bit. And we got a Laparca shuffle, so you can never complain when you get the Laparca shuffle. And
got a huge pop. That might have got the biggest pop of the night when he did that shuffle, or the match anyway. Who knows what else happened that night on Nitro. But.
Well, it's very fascinating. Like, if you go back and watch those Nitros, Laparca got generally one of the biggest pops of the undercard, if not, like,
he's most so of over. The... I mean, just, and nobody has any idea who he is or what his character's about, or but they just know he, like, looks cool and acts cool, and so he's cool. So, sometimes wrestling's that simple, but, you know. They can't really – that doesn't always work out that way in real life.
And he's one of the few guys that people, if they watch WCW at the time, remember. They're like, oh, Laparca, he was the cool skeleton with the chair, you know. Mm. But I don't know what else to really say about this. It was a lot of fun. Laparca got the win with a powerbomb through two chairs, which looked really brutal. Laparca seemed to be the focus at the end, which was really cool, but this is basically just Tony and Bobby laughing at them, which was very strange. Anything else to add, Mark?
No, yeah, I mean, I agree. I thought it was cool, but it was just weird how they didn't take it seriously at all. The announcers, I mean, I should say it's weird, but it's not. It's WCW, and at this point, you know, Bobby was phoning it in at this point, just collecting his paycheck, and Schiavone was just kind of being Schiavone, just mesmerized by everything, not really adding anything to it. So that was weird, but it was, I mean, I think we're spoiled by now, like 20 years later, having seen all this ECW stuff and all this crazy hardcore stuff. But at the time, this was I think this is really before the WWF hardcore matches really got going. So it was, I think, kind of unique, at least for WCW TV at the time. So, and a lot of those big moves, like the powerbomb to the table and the powerbomb to the chairs, and like I think Silver King did like a spinning DVT through a table, like that stuff got pretty big pops by the crowd, who was odd. They were like kind of like sitting on their hands a lot of the time, but then they would pop big for certain spots too. So they were definitely, I don't know if the crowd knew what to think, just like Bobby and Tony, but it definitely got a reaction, and it was an interesting thing to see. I mean, I remember seeing this when it first happened on WCW TV, and it's unique, it's something else, and it's just too bad they didn't really capitalize it, at least at the time, at least from the announced side of things. They could have really pushed it as more of a cool, oh my God, look how amazing this thing is, instead of just, what the hell's going on here? Look, yeah. It's a pumpkin and putting him in a trash can. What's happening?
Yeah. Glenn?
I appreciated the fact that they had a wooden stepladder. I always appreciate that in some of the earlier hardcore matches where they still – where they don't have like the standardized equipment that we're used to now.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. One of my biggest pet peeves in wrestling today – one of my biggest pet peeves in wrestling today is whenever someone pulls out a Singapore cane and they're not like the Sandman or Just Incredible. It just pisses me off. But anyways, continue.
That La Parca shuffle, I didn't realize at first was one of his signature things until I saw a couple of the other matches that we have today. And I for a second, I thought, is La Parca strutting and cutting?
It's a pretty good little dance, I gotta say, which we'll talk about as we go on, which we might as well go on here. La Parca, you know, WCW dies. He returns to Mexico. He kind of toils around the Indies in a while and then eventually has a big run at Arena Mexico with CMLL. And this is him facing El Hijo del Santo, who the son of Santo, you know, one of the most famous wrestler in wrestling history in Mexico. You know, they always talked about on WCW with Mike Tenay that like tens of thousands of people showed up for his funeral and he was buried in his mask. And this is the son who became a hell of a wrestler himself and probably the biggest draw of the 90s as well. So huge, huge star here. And they're having a blood feud match. And when LA Park comes out, he comes out in a white skeleton outfit.
He looked like a stormtrooper.
It was fucking cool. And I think it became pretty obvious, Glenn, why he did that, don't you think?
Glenn.
Glenn died.
Glenn is in the middle of living dangerously again, I guess.
So, Mark, my beautiful setup, why don't you go with it?
Yeah, I thought it was, I thought visually it just looked like, I don't know, it felt like this was a big deal, just the way that, to me, cause I don't know, to me, whenever like a wrestler has a special outfit on, it means like the match is a big deal. And I knew that most of what I had seen in La Parca was just in that black outfit. So just the fact that he was dressed up differently to me, I was like, oh, I guess this is like a big match, you know? So it kind of had that feel to it, but, Then it became obvious as we went along why I guess that's the idea behind why he was wearing white.
Yeah, that's an old wrestling trope. If you're gonna bleed a lot, you might as well wear white because it looks more vicious.
Well, he takes that message to the extreme, I would say, which is appropriate us being in the extreme vault here today. And boy, once things get bloody with these two, and it's really violent from the beginning. I really like how you can tell. I mean, obviously, I have no idea the backstory of this at all, but you can tell right away that this is a vicious feud. There's a lot of hatred here because Iho just goes right after him, just delivering nasty clotheslines, totally dominating La Parca in the beginning. He's beating at his head, just beating it like viciously, biting his head, pulling at his mask, giving him uppercuts, diving to the outside. He's just destroying La Parca like with a vengeance here. And then I guess they wind up in the crowd, and I don't know, it gets confusing for a while. I think there's like 5 minutes where you just can't even see what's happening in the crowd.
Yeah, the crowd brawling.
And then by the end of it all, and at this point, La Parca starts taking over too and is just beating him. And by the end of this whole sequence, this giant brawl, these two are entirely bloody. Like, Iho has like blood pouring out of his mask, and then the blood's getting on La Parca. La Parca's biting the bloody mask. It's just like, it's insane.
He's wearing a pink skeleton costume by the end here.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, yeah. So I guess that was the visual he had in mind when he decided to do the whole white version of his outfit. And it was, I guess, effective. if you're looking for me to just sit there with my jaw dropped on the ground while I watch it, then it's totally effective.
I'm curious what Glenn made of this with his real, like, first lucha insight. We'll see if he's alive again. Glenn?
Hi. one of the first things that really stood out to me is that we have two referees in the ring for a singles match.
Okay. In Mexico, essentially, okay, the bad guys are called rudos and the good guys are called technicos. And most of the time there is a rudo ref and a technico ref.
Huh.
So that would be why
they started fighting toward the end.
Yeah, one referee generally favors the good guys and one referee generally favors the bad guys.
That explains a lot of what we would see throughout these matches. So
yeah. So I don't know.
So they actually label themselves like I am a bad guy? Like that's pretty much.
There's one corrupt referee and there's one good guy referee.
It's known and accepted that part of wrestling is dealing with one evil referee.
Pretty much.
That's hilarious and awesome, actually. I like that.
Yeah. They don't, you know, it's not always considered that rudos are bad guys. They're just generally ones that cheat, but there is a huge section of the crowd that cheers for rudos. So, and boos the technicos. So there is that, but yeah. Mexico, two refs, one's evil, one's good, generally.
So does one ref have more power than the other?
No, they're equal refs.
One is just hoping the other one gets knocked down, and then they can institute their either good or evil decision, I suppose.
Yeah, they kind of argue throughout about who's going for the pin cover. Sometimes they both count at the same time. I should probably explain that one before we started watching because that gets a little confusing. But I didn't even really notice it because I've seen it a bunch. But yeah. There is that. So you can continue on there, Glenn.
When Del Santo started bleeding through his mask, I thought, oh no, this is going to ruin La Parca's pristine white costume.
And little did you know.
Little did I know the ruination that would come unto this thing. The first fall was really, really brisk. Before they kind of settled into the rhythm of it in the second and the third fall. I think it really started moving in the second fall when La Parca got the advantage and hit a lot of energy. Then he tossed him out of the ring and started smacking him with a 5-gallon bucket.
Yeah. Amazing.
The fans desperately trying to get out of the way of the seats that were getting knocked around into them. Like there was one in particular who like kind of got pinned in there and they kept shoving the row of seats back. And you know, this one guy was just standing there. that was around the time I started to notice, that Del Santo was really busted open. I mean, it got ugly.
Yeah, this is one of the most vicious blade jobs I might have ever seen.
I'm just like shuddering, like imagining it again.
Yeah. For some reason, it wasn't the one that I thought was the most disgusting that we've watched of all the matches, but we'll talk about that later.
The three grossest that I've seen, I think, are this one, and then Eddie Guerrero being split open, and then... what's the freaking guy's name that sued ECW, the 17-year-old, like, traffic?
Oh, Mass Transit.
I was going to call him Traffic Jam.
Yeah, something like that.
I like that. If I become a wrestler at the age of 35, I'm going to call myself Traffic Jam.
That's a great name. kind of overall thoughts at the end of this one, Mark? Good match? You recommend it to people?
You know, if you can handle the blood, I think it is a really good match. It felt really epic. The violence was very told the story in a lot of ways. I don't know why they hate each other, but you definitely get across that they do. And it's just fun to watch La Parca because in the middle of all this violent shit, he works in like his weird little shuffle and like his little like playful mannerisms, which is just this weird dichotomy with him. And this was a good example of it. And then this was one of many somewhat confusing finishes too. So that was the only real criticism is that does La Parca get kicked in the nuts? One ref, it looks like he's getting the pin, but the one ref like just pulls him off. Or no, the one ref pulls Iho on top of La Parca to make the pin.
Yeah. Low blows in Mexico are pretty much the most violent, illegal thing you can do. So, when the I think it was I watched this one a couple days ago, so I can't remember exactly.
I even rewatched it again today just so I could, because it could finish so confusing, and I rewatched it, and now I still can't remember what happened.
I think Santo
they pulled the first ref pulled Santo over, like he did a move and he pulled, you know, Santo on top of him for the pin.
Yeah. Yeah, Santo hit
then
the low blow.
That pin didn't count because he disqualified him. Because
he hit the low blow, yeah.
Even though I think it was the same ref that made the pin, which made no sense either.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Classic Dusty finish. Glenn?
I think that when this match was really moving and when it had energy, it was pretty good. The crowd was into it for sure. When they were trading two counts toward the end, I think that whole section was pretty good. And then the bit with the referees, even though I didn't really understand it while I was watching, makes a lot more sense now.
Oh, yeah. Way more sense when you realize that there's literally a bad guy referee is a part of every match.
Yeah, and then after the count, like this big brawl starts to break out and our footage ends.
Yeah,
I know, it was a big cliffhanger there. I'm still waiting to see how that all played out.
I don't remember. I think this is the most famous of their matches. I could be wrong, but I think this is the probably because of the blood is the reason it's the most famous. But let's move on to our next match. Two matches really. Is first Messias, who he's currently in Lucha Underground as what the hell's his name? Something Del Morte. Like the guy of 1,000 deaths or whatever it was. He was in World Society X. I think he might have been in TNA too. But he's this huge muscular guy. Never really considered that great, but the La Parca matches get a big upside here. And we start off with a brawl between them. And then the second one is at Triple Mania, which is previously AAA's WrestleMania or whatever. And it's a mask versus hair match, which is the most important match in Mexico, more important than titles, is putting up your hair or your mask. So, but we'll start with the initial match, and we got La Parca with his thriller entrance and Messias with his KKK guys with torches entrance, for lack of
a... And it's like that...
Go ahead.
No, it was Rec Room with a Tower. It's the Rec Room with the Dream theme. It was re-recorded in 2002 for the Two Towers trailer.
There you go. I was going to describe that song in a much less coherent way, so we'll just stick with what Glenn said.
So we're on to AAA, which they only use the single fall, not the best two out of three falls. So that might be a little easier for you to digest, Glenn. What did you think?
And a six-sided ring, as we mentioned. So,
yeah, that's true.
La Parca immediately goes outside and gets a chair as soon as the match begins, because he knows how this is going. this crowd, I noticed, has more women, I think, than any wrestling crowd I've seen, like, almost ever, maybe.
Grand total ever.
Yeah, there's usually a lot of women.
Certainly, I mean, we've been watching these ECW shows, which have no women.
Yeah, that's true.
So, by contrast, it's quite noticeable. I don't know exactly how these things work in Lucha, but I'm kind of used to the dynamic that you have in U.S. wrestling where, except in certain circumstances, the legends are faces. So people who've been around for a long time or had legendary runs a decade or two decades ago almost always are faces. And so I expected by 2010 that La Parca might be in that mold.
Nope.
But no, extremely no, as we see in the rest of the matches, really. He is not just a heel, but like a big old dick to
big
all
old
these people.
Nasty, evil bastard.
Yeah, seriously.
Who still looks like he's having fun, though. It's weird. There's like this always like playful side to him while he's just being the most violent asshole you ever saw.
Yeah. And this first Messias match, Messias, I don't remember, is the one where La Parca tosses a huge freaking wheelie bin.
Yes.
This huge gray plastic wheelie bin, and it's amazing. And he like they do a power bomb onto it. I think they did a body slam onto it too, or it might have been another power, but they used it a couple of times. After the first one, the referee started going to take it out of the ring, and I was thinking, oh, I want to see him use that some more. And then one of the wrestlers, I think it was probably La Parca, went over and grabbed it and got it back into the ring, back into the action. Messiah saved it, and then he powerbombed La Parca onto it. So those spots I thought were awesome. I know the importance of the mask in Lucha, but L.A. Park was basically unmasked here. I mean, he just pulled it right off.
Yeah, he basically just had the one part that covers his mouth kind of like area, and then the rest was like his hood part, and then it was just like off. I don't know. It seemed like that should be a bigger deal. Like, to
well,
me,
the problem is, he was covering blood. So it doesn't matter.
So I wrote that he had a blood mask.
Yeah, the blood mask is fair.
Yeah, that's a hell of a technicality.
Which we'll see throughout. I think my absolute favorite spot of this match is where La Parca puts a mask on Messias, puts a white towel over him, and goes for the pin. Oh, no, goes for the figure four. And then it's countered.
He puts another mask on his face, like not on him, but like laying on it. Looks like then a white towel, and then I just like, yeah, he goes to that figure four. I thought was going to be the finish when he gets a small package off it. But the other spot I loved is when La Parca has the table in the middle of the ring and decides to just stand on it and play to the crowd and strut, and then he turns around and gets speared off the top rope through the whole table by Messiah, which was awesome.
Okay, that was this match. Yeah, that was insane.
I was just – right before that happened, I was thinking that those chairs look even more frail and fragile than the chairs they use in
the rest.
Oh, man,
I might have actually messed
that's
up.
That's the second match.
Damn, spoiler alert. Sorry, guys. These all blend together.
They do indeed.
Yeah, watching the same guys back to back sometimes. But yeah,
familiar with them.
Yeah. So go ahead, Glenn. Sorry.
I was thinking these things were so fragile, and then he stood on one, and so it's like, well, obviously it's, you know, actually a chair that someone can sit in. I'm not sure I could, but okay. Park got a bunch of chair shots and got the pin just off that.
We also go, you know, another low blow because
which is obviously leading into the next match we're going to talk about.
Yeah, and this one is the one where La Parca stands on a chair and poses, not on the table.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
So what overall did you think of this one, Mark?
I enjoyed this match a lot. It was really action-packed. It was back and forth again. It wasn't as disturbingly bloody as the first match, as the Iho match, but, it had some good use of blood, I would say. Moderate use of blood. I don't know. It's sad that when I'm calling La Parca's entire face covered in blood moderate, but it feels moderate compared to his entire white body covered in blood, I guess. there were some good dives here to the outside. Some really good. I really liked the one dive that Messias did. It really just actually looked really impactful. He dive and like had his whole shoulder block against the barrier, and it just really looked like, you know, standard stuff we see in Lucha all the time. But it really looked like their moves all looked really impactful. It felt like, you know, there was strong impact. Nothing really felt it felt like they were really laying into each other on everything. So I really liked that. And then I enjoyed the ending. It's kind of reminded me of WrestleMania 7, or was it 17? Yeah, where Austin just gives up and gets frustrated and every move doesn't work. So he just beats The Rock with the chair 1,000 times and then pins him. You know, that La Parca had tried every move in his arsenal, and then he's just like, screw it, I'm going to kick this guy in the nuts and hit him with the chair 1,000 times. So I liked it a lot.
Yeah, classic. And any final words, Glenn?
No, I thought it was a... I thought it was a perfectly fine match to lead into something supposed to be even more heated.
which nice segue because we're moving on to the main event of Triple Mania 9, maybe? No,
Triple Mania 19.
So there's been quite a few. This is a mask versus hair match, which, you know, insane. You know, the most violent match in Mexico. And we have a full on LA Park entrance to Thriller, which made me very happy. What did you think of this, Mark?
Yeah, this was, I got nervous at first, or not nervous, maybe nervous / excited, because it looked like he was wearing another white outfit when he first came out, but I guess that was just an overcoat, because then
he had coat and pants. Yeah. That was reverse of his outfit that he was wearing underneath.
He looked really badass coming out.
It was totally amazing.
Yeah. And he was kind of coming out through the crowd and like playing it up with the crowd along the way with his little chair guitar thing. And I thought it was just pretty, his entrance just felt really cool in this match for some reason. And, he's talking a lot of shit to the crowd too. Like once the match gets started, I love how basically the LA Park formula is like start the match and like immediately throw the guy to the outside and then just immediately start doing like crazy shit with chairs and stuff. Like he immediately suplexes him through this table and it's like it has like the legs sticking out and like all these chairs and crap on it, and it destroys the announcer's table, and you could even hear like all the microphones breaking up and like all the audio problems that are happening because he's knocked all this shit over. Like I love how real it felt again, just because, you know, it on WWE they're planning to knock all the tables over, maybe they were here too, but you never hear like the screen microphone and all this stuff. You know, they just cut the mics so you don't hear it on TV, but here they don't do that. They just let you hear the mics breaking up and like piercing your ears. I just found funny. It felt very Mexico to me. And there were some awesome spots too in this. There was the one like holy shit moment, I'd say, was the power bomb off the apron and through the table to the outside. There was Macias is a power slam through a table. And then I like Macias's shine in both matches. He finally at some point in the middle he kind of like gets his hands on a chair and he starts just laying into La Parca. He did that in the first match and he does that again here. That's kind of his classic shine spot, I guess, from the two matches I've seen from him. And again, it just felt like a very real fight. I mean, it's as real as pro wrestling can feel, especially when one guy is, you know, wearing that La Parca skeleton outfit. But yeah, it was fun. And yeah, again, this is where you see LA Park standing on the table and strutting and getting speared through, which I thought was just the coolest spot. And by the way, did you guys notice the referee's hair in this match? The one referee that had like, he had like gray hair, but then he had black splotches on it. It was like the craziest hair I've ever seen. There was only one angle where you saw the top of his head.
Yeah.
But I don't know why I was noticing stuff like that, but
it's all right. Glenn, what do you think?
Once I had figured out the face heel dynamics a little better, I thought this match really worked that well, where Macias was doing a lot of good face stuff and La Parca was doing a lot of good heel stuff. There was one spot where Macias had him had a hold on him outside the ring, and he brought him over to a woman in the crowd to toss her drink in his face.
The absolute best part of that is so he gets the drink tossed in La Parca's face, right? After the match, after Macias's hair was shaven, he comes back to the lady and waves Macias's hair in that lady's face.
Yeah, I was surprised. She reaches out and tries to grab the hair, but he pulls it back. And then she, like, stands up and turns her back to him. Like, I'm not even going to acknowledge the result of this debacle that has befallen us. And the Parker just stands behind her, like, taps her on the shoulder to try to get her to turn back around.
Just the biggest dick in the world, pretty much.
I was wondering if maybe it was like Mrs. Macias or something, or if it was like his wife, or like who that lady, if that lady actually had significance, or if it was just a random fan in the crowd.
Yeah, I'm not sure. She might have been, but
I want to believe it's like Macias's lover or something. Makes the best story better for me.
Yeah, for sure.
And anyone who's listened to our ECW shows before, or the Place to Be Nation Rewind I did recently on Over the Edge 98, knows my various objections to walk fighting. And there is some of that here. In one spot, it's not even walk fighting. They're just walking over to the place where they want to do a spot. So that's something that gets on my nerves in some of these matches. But there were other good spots they did outside. There was one spot where Macias set up some chairs and then reenacted La Parca's winning powerbomb from the Nitro match, except it was on the floor too. Later on, he hit a hell of a codebreaker.
Oh yeah, that move got super popular in Mexico. Like, there was a point where everyone was doing that move. So you'll see it quite a lot. But yeah, the other big thing besides the spear through the table, which was probably the biggest thing, was the huge tope that LA Park hits at one point. Just insane. But yeah, I love this match. Double Juice. It looked like a real fight. They were brawling all over. Very intense. I don't know what to, how you can say anything bad about this. And of course, you know, LA Park wins by grabbing brass knuckles and hitting Macias in the face with them. Which...
And also, as such a dick and such a heel, he hits him with the Nux and then still hooks both legs and leans heavily on him. Like, he is trying with all his might to keep this man down, even though he just knocked him out with the Nux. That bit was so good as well.
La Parca really does a lot of the little stuff like that. Just like the extra stuff that if you notice, you're like, wow, what a dick. That's so subtle and so awesome. You know, he just does little extra things just to remind everyone that he's just a total asshole.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no, bones about it. You know, he's even, you see in the next match, he comes out too bad to the bone.
So. I want to know his story. Like, I want to know we might need to add this to the list of like, you know, fake documentaries we produced, like La Parca's childhood and how he came to be who he is today.
The evil skeleton worshiper. Like, I don't know, but I'm sure it's probably pretty disturbing. But yeah, great match. Any final words? Glenn, you're going to recommend some lucha to people?
Well, if I were to recommend some lucha to people, given the four matches I've seen in my life now, this might be one of them. I think some of the more heated segments really carried the storyline, even though not knowing Spanish, I had very little idea of what the background was.
They wanted to kill each other.
I figured that much.
I didn't catch any sort of. It didn't seem like the announcers were really playing up the background too much, as much as just reacting to the match, like, you know, like any normal non-WCW announcer would do.
True enough. But I think at this point, we're going to take a quick little break. We have two more matches to talk about, but we're just going to hear about all the other wonderful shows on the Place to Be Nation and the PWO P2BN podcast network.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, The Place to Be Podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past through Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Now, do you want your wrestling podcast to be informed by historical and analytical insight and by obsessive watching of footage from any era and any promotion and for them all to be available on one feed?
Sure do, Parv.
Chad, are you ready to shill?
I am, because I know you're talking about the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
Let's go through that again. PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
Got it. That's where you can listen to all sorts of different shows covering the history of pro wrestling in detail.
Shows like Titans of Wrestling with my boys Pete, the man of a 10,000 discs, and Kelly, the jobber lover.
I'm a jobber.
The Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham.
Join me, Stephen Graham.
The smash hit wrestling game show Brainbuster with
Johnny Sorrow.
We have a host of top contributors like wrestling historian Chris Zellner.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris Zellner here, starting a new podcast venture.
And the Pro Wrestling Only admins, the man who knows more about 90s wrestling than maybe anybody on earth, Charles, and good old Will from Texas.
This is Will, and I'm joined today by my good buddy Charles.
Whether it's the territories, WWF, NWA, Mid-South, Texas, Portland, tag team wrestling, Japanese wrestling, lucha, old school, new school, we got it.
And of course, the feed still has the mothership itself,
where the big boys play,
on which we continue our endless journey through WCW Supercards.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. It's pro wrestling only.
You know you want to hear it.
And we're back, and we'd like to thank everyone for joining us. And we just like to remind you that if you could, if you wanted to, if you go to the Facebook page at it's PWO PTBN Podcast Network. If you send a couple bucks, just to help us pay for this, the hosting of this, once we raise the money to host the service, we'll close everything off. We're not in it to make money. I think we're pretty close. I think we're like $20 away and we need till September. So, we're doing well, but,
Wait, you're not doing this to make money? I thought the whole plan was we were going to build up this huge Extreme Vault audience and then turn into like a premium pay service. Wasn't that the long term now?
Shh.
Seek the key part is secret.
The right. Secret.
Well, just edit that out. What?
Everyone listening should watch out for the launch of our Patreon.
Yeah, for sure. Before we get into these two Dr. Wagner Jr. versus LA Park matches, is there anything you want to plug, Mark?
Sure. How did you know, Steven? Well, I'll quickly plug my own non-wrestling thing, lionsofliberty.com. If you're interested in my libertarian, liberty-ish perspective on things, you can check that out or follow us at Lions of Liberty on Twitter. Or if you're interested in wrestling-related stuff, which you might be if you're listening to this show, I don't know. I've got a bunch of articles up on Place to Be Nation from over the last year or two. But recently I've been contributing to the What If series, where we take a look at, a series of ideas of what could have happened in certain scenarios in wrestling history. And this one is the latest one, is looking at different years where there were not King of the Ring tournaments, who we would pick to win and how that tournament would play out. And Steven, if you saw my entry, not to call you out, I don't know if you got around to reading this piece yet, but I think you'd be very thrilled with who I chose for.
Not
pick.
Yet. Which year?
I chose 1990.
Oh, okay.
I think you could probably take a guess with just that clue.
I assume it's a fat natural disaster of some sort.
On the right track.
Which would have been amazing. Earthquake in a Crown
awesome.
Is a dream come true. And
I basically just thought of the best visual and worked my way backwards from there.
That's what wrestling's all about. Glenn, do you have anything to plug?
Yes, I do the Wednesday walk around the web at placetobenation.com. Every Wednesday morning, it's a link roundup of various things I find interesting or amusing or important in some way, sometimes featuring my non-libertarian perspectives. I was doing a weekly series on Star Trek DS9, which I plan to return to soon, I hope, but that's on hiatus as I deal with various personal issues. But everything that I've written for that so far is at placetobenation.com/StarTrek. You can find that at any time. I am also on the PTBN Rewind podcasts, several of them. The last one I did was Over the Edge 98, but they've had a couple since then that people should check out. I also had a bit in that What If piece about the King of the Ring. I did 2004.
Did you pick Earthquake?
No, I did not. I did not take Earthquake. I hate to disappoint Tajiri. You. No, I did a SmackDown King of the Ring.
Oh, Tajiri wasn't SmackDown? I don't remember.
Tajiri, I think, was tag champion on Raw around that time.
Okay. So you have an out. That's fair.
No, I took SmackDown 2004 and began the reign of King John.
I don't even know who the hell you're talking about. Who's John? John Cena?
Yes.
As a king? Okay. A rapping king? I can dig that.
The king of thugonomics, even though his Boston heritage gives him a strong anti-monarchical streak.
Oh, gosh. Okay, I like that. I like that. Yeah, if you listen to this and you like this, there's also the Pro Wrestling Super Show, which you probably know because this show spun out of it. But yeah, we just recently put up one where we took old gimmicks from the past and we recast them with current day wrestlers, which was a lot of fun. There'll be something else, you know, in July, as always. And the All Japan Excite series, where we go through 90s All Japan, is it comes out about once a month too, and it's a blast. So I recommend those two. But we're here to talk about LA Park, my man. We're three matches into this set. I'll have the YouTube links in the description if you want to watch along. And we've enjoyed everything up to here. Now we're on to his, a couple matches with him and Dr. Wagner Jr. First up, is from AAA. I think it's in, I forget when it's from, but it doesn't matter. And, what matters is LA Park comes out too bad to the bone. And then Dr. Wagner Jr. comes out to bad medicine. And then the first thing, so when LA Park comes out, he's playing air guitar to a chair. And then he puts the chair in the ring, puts a Dr. Wagner Jr. shirt on top of the chair, and then lights the chair on fire. Which is absolutely glorious. But Mark, what did you think of this match overall outside of the amazing entrances?
Oh, yeah. Well, once again, just like I mentioned earlier, like, I mean, I think the, and I don't know if these are, to me, it's all new to me. So I don't know if he normally comes out to bad to the bone or he just changed songs. But to me, it was signaled compared to the first two matches I saw, it signaled a change in his entrance music. So I don't even know if this is in chronological order. So, but, I thought it was just a cool entrance anyway, just because the music's awesome. And then, Dr. Wagner had a pretty cool entrance too. He's really, the crowd's really into him. He really played up to the crowd. He's coming into bad medicine. And, yeah, I like how the chair's on fire and we're like busy looking at the chair and then they just start going at it. And the ref tries to like frantically get the chair out of the ring. But then, that ends with, La Parka, or LA Park, I should say, grabbing the chair, I think, while it's still on fire and yes. smacking, Dr. Wagner with it, which I thought was pretty cool. It was a fun match. It was kind of, I mean, it felt in some ways similar to the last couple of matches, to the Messias matches, just in terms of the feel of the hate-filled brawl, because it's I guess it's the same basic formula. It's, you know, asshole La Parka against his, you know, heroic of in some way opponent. So, you know, it has in many ways the same kind of structure. And it really had that big match feel. So, until the very strange, screwy finish, which, but there's a lot of, let's see what we have more ref bumps here. Of course, there's some cool, it seemed like these guys might be Randy Orton fans. They had like the, Wagner did like that Randy Orton power slam at one point, that like snapping power slam, and then he also did like a draping DDT, or actually La Parka did the power slam. I don't think they're actually homages to Randy Orton, but
I can't imagine they are.
A couple of his moves made their way into this match.
Yeah, Glenn?
I love the angle of setting the shirt on fire in the ring. It's a little reminiscent of the traitor Sergeant Slaughter burning a Hulkamania shirt because they wouldn't let him burn a flag, or he didn't want to burn the flag or whatever. That is a good angle, and someone in the U.S. ought to take that.
Yeah.
I don't know about doing something on fire in the arena. Maybe that's a reason why they couldn't in the U.S. and could in Mexico, because as we've said, all of these matches have sort of a grungy feel compared to what we might be used to. Although maybe not compared to what we're used to doing the ECW podcast. So maybe I speak too quickly there.
Yeah, I think AAA definitely looks nicer than ECW did.
It's like a cleaner, less Bingo Holly ECW in many ways, at least from the matches we've seen.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, Conan and the guys in charge of AAA really kind of loved ECW, so they took a lot of their elements for sure.
I don't have a ton of notes on the moves and the flow of this match. I think Mark really captured that well. I mean, the structure of this is set from some of the other big main matches that we've seen already. There was one spot I liked when they fought on the top turnbuckle, and it turned into a superplex by Wagner. The ref bump at the end was amazing when the new referee ran in, counted to two, and hurt his hand slapping the mat for the two count, and so he got up and started holding his wrist.
Until
LaParca hit a low blow and got the pin, and that referee's wrist, it's a miracle.
Was magically
it was
healed.
Fun, and he could fast count.
Yeah. So great heel chicanery here. So
I thought it was funny how the ref noticed his wrist was hurt, not as it hit the mat the second time, but as it was about to land for the third count. That's when I was like, whoa, oh, wait, my wrist is hurt. I forgot. I just got hurt a second ago.
Yeah, good stuff. So, you know, this was not on here because it was an all-time great LaParca match, but I think it kind of set the tone for the match that we'll talk about now, which...
One of the things that really does have is tone, yes.
So, this match here from TXT was, I think, my second match of the year for 2013. A match that got a lot of praise in certain circles. Obviously, it's not from the big promotions in Mexico, so maybe not everyone.
Can I just add a point about the last match?
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Not really about the match, but you guys might have turned it off. But as we were talking about earlier, I know a little bit of Spanish, so I just listened to the post-match promos. I didn't do a direct translation or anything, but I know enough to get the general idea of what they're sort of talking about. So basically, the gist... is that after the match, L.A. Park makes fun of Dr. Wagner's wife or something. He's making talking shit and referencing his wife and essentially challenges him to a mask versus mask match. And then Dr. Wagner comes back and basically says, like, yeah, I'm better than you. I'll do the mask versus match, which it seems weird because you just got screwed. Like, and this guy's like challenging you to, like, you know, respect, you know, you and put go into this ultimate mask versus match respect match. It's like the biggest thing you can do in Mexico. But like, you just got screw job ending by this fake, you know, evil referee, which apparently is just an institution in this promotion. So, you know, aren't you just setting yourself up to get screwed by another evil ref and lose your mask? I don't know why you would just go along with a challenge without maybe stipulating something about refs. But then this guy comes out who I presume is like the commissioner or something, and he starts talking, and he essentially books the match for the future, but then he starts, and it wasn't totally clear to me, like I said, I'm not fluent here, but then I think he might have been booking another match too, because he starts mentioning like Perro Aguayo and Cybernetico and all these other guys, so that was a little confusing to me, but generally, point being, LaParca, the winner, and the guy that screwed him over, challenged him to a mask versus match, and Wagner accepts, and then something happens with the commissioner, basically like booking that and other future matches between them.
Yeah, I think they like to tease mask versus match matches a lot because they're big deals, but you might believe it's hard to get people to commit to losing their masks because, you know, it's your identity. You're basically losing out on future money, so they have to pay you a lot of money, so they don't happen as much as they're teased. I would guess that they probably book some kind of, like, 8-man in a cage and the last one out gets their head shaved or loses their mask and the two of them were in it or something like that. That tends to happen a lot. So yeah. I'm not entirely sure what happened, but that would be my guess. So, let's move on to this match from May of 2013. One of my favorite matches ever. We got an improvement. First of all, we're back to, 2 out of 3 falls, which, I kind of missed. But we got an improvement on the burning chair as this time, not only is LA Park wearing, instead of black, it's like a gray, weird, like, I don't know how to describe his suit.
It looks
suit.
Like a lizard.
Yeah, like lizard scale La Parka outfit, which is freaking cool. And then he burns the chair, or he has the chair with the shirt on it. He's burning it. And then he's leaning behind it while flipping him off as Dr. Wagner made his entrance, which is probably one of my favorite things of all time. But Glenn, why don't you start on this one?
I also appreciate how once the match starts, he hits him with the chair that had the shirt on it while there are bits of burnt shirt clinging to the chair still.
Yeah.
that's using every part of the animal there. once again, they're right out of the ring, into the crowd, right off the bat, tearing up the mask again, right off the bat. And like, this handful of lucha matches is basically what I've seen, and already I'm getting a little tired of tearing up the mask all the time.
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often. You're just seeing the time to
happen. Yeah, I figure we're seeing, like, the big angles where the big angle stuff happens. And yeah. I guess if you see huge main event after huge main event after huge main event, even the great main events will get old, right?
Yeah, exactly.
La Parka tosses in a whole gaggle of chairs, almost like Terry Funk style, just throwing them into the ring. He sets them up facing each other in his signature arrangement. Power bombs Wagner through four chairs and gets the three count for the first fall. I wasn't sure at first if this is 2 out of 3 falls, but I guess so.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of this match yet to come.
Welcome to every lucha match I've ever watched. I'm like, oh, first that was quick. Oh, okay, 2 out of 3.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
and
about the, you have anything else on the first fall, Glenn?
No.
Okay. So yeah, I just wanted to add. Like, yeah, there was crowd brawling in this one, but I kind of did enjoy how La Parka was grabbing the guardrail and throwing him into it. He grabbed these weird steps and tossed them at him. So it looked a lot more chaotic than normal. Like, normally crowd brawling is kind of like, as Glenn was mentioning earlier, where you hold onto someone's shoulder while they slowly follow you around. And this one seemed a little more violent. But what did you think of the first fall, Mark?
Yeah, what stood out to me, again, was just really the viciousness of La Parka, the viciousness of he kept doing these chair shots when they're on the outside to Wagner's skull, but not like the regular chair shots where they hold the legs and hits him in the face. It was like holding the side of the chair and just like nailing him in the skull repeatedly. It just looked like more real and nasty. And then, the blood is just already soaking up Wagner's mask and like dripping out of it. And this is just in the first fall even. and then the power bomb was nasty through the chairs. Call back to the Nitro match, sort of.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh wow, that's it. And then I did the whole lucha thing. I was like, oh wait, no, it's not over. It's only been 7 minutes. We got 30 more minutes of this.
Yeah. So let's.
But, it's already like it feels like an already epic contest. Albeit it's only been like 10 minutes or so at this point before they've even gotten into the next few falls.
Yeah. So let's move on to the second fall, which I thought was pretty damn great too. One of my favorite things is, you know, as Will from Goodwill Wrestling will say, you know, going after a cut and tearing at the cut is one of his favorite things in wrestling, and this one had that in spades. Yeah, La Parka just he like was licking the blood off his face and like doing like the douche pussy motion while with the blood of Wagner Jr. on his face. It was disgusting.
The licking of the blood is just the most disturbing thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. And then he puts him on the top rope and rams his head into the top of the post. Just the most violent looking stuff. Eventually Wagner makes a comeback by, doing this huge spear through the chairs. And they have a little more crowd brawling. Now La Parka's juicing. Sorry. We get to this part where Wagner grabs a beer bottle and breaks it over LA Park's head and then proceeds to jab him with it in the head. And then they come back in the ring and Wagner hits the Wagner driver for the second fall. what did you think of this, Glenn?
In contrast to the way I was kind of getting tired with the mask stuff in the first fall, I liked the mask stuff in the second fall when Laparca was really, really going after Wagner's mask. He, like, got a strip of it cut and used it to, like, pull his head up by and then mash it into the mat as part of going after the cut as well.
Yeah.
So that I thought was, again, Laparca just being such a dick. the ref counts to two through one of the more flagrant instances of Laparca putting his feet on the ropes just yeah. right in front of his face.
Yeah.
The desperation spear by Dr. Wagner I thought was really good. And The Wagner driver, I think he does pretty well, and that's about it for the second fall. I think it really picked up here.
Yeah, and you're just gonna gloss over the beer bottle.
To be completely honest, I kind of missed that when I was watching the match. I don't know if I like got a text or something and I wasn't looking at the screen, but yeah, I missed the beer bottle.
Okay, Mark, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I love the beer bottle touch, because first he like smashes him on the hits him on the head with it a couple times, and then he goes and smashes it, and then he grinds it into that. Ugh, just sick. The whole thing is just in a good way. I mean, I can handle this stuff, but for those with weak stomachs, I might say to not watch this match. But boy, I mean, if you're trying to convey hatred and violence, it's conveyed here quite well. And there's one part I don't know if you guys noticed where they're brawling in the crowd and like. Like Laparca is just getting totally. I hope not skipping ahead again. I keep getting confused. It's one thing to keep track of which match it is, but to keep track of which fall is even more difficult. But they're in the crowd and like Laparca is getting beat up, and he like turns to this dude in the crowd and like grabs him, and then he's like talking to the guy. Like I don't know what he's saying. It seems almost like he's saying like, "Hey, help me get out of here, man!" Like, and the guy like backs away from him, and then like Wagner comes back and like hits him with chairs again. I just thought that was kind of funny.
Funny moment.
The second fall was just violent and brutal and bloody and just really drove the violence home, I think. And it was a good thing. I like that they went back to the crowd for that second fall because it felt appropriate with the escalation of the violence, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we get the third fall, which has a lot of a real doctor trying to wrap up LA Park's head with tape or something.
But do you can't. Find that Dr. Wagner is not a real doctor?
No comment. So
he is a doctor. He's not interested in treating Laparca.
That's for sure.
Exactly.
So you have
I could treat your wound, but you're my enemy, so I will not.
So this, like, it might not have been the biggest blade job of all time, but this was like the grossest looking at a cut I've ever seen. Like, you saw the referee digging his fingers in to try to stop the blood, and he couldn't do it. Like, it was just. Ugh. Oh, disgusting, but
standard technique most doctors use.
Yeah. Stick their fingers in. So they brawled for a bit more. Low blow by Parka gets to, a low blow by Dr. Wagner Jr. gets to. Wagner, he goes to splash Park, but Park moves and he splashes the ref. And then Wagner gets the Wagner driver for three, but then the referee disqualifies him. Because, you know, he punched him and did a splash on him and gave LA Park the win. So that was kind of crazy. Or it might have been the low blow he disqualified him for. He disqualified him for something because he was a, you know, he's not the, his refereeing was not on the up and up. But I thought it was a good way to send the match home. A little screwy finish, you know, that's why it's not a 5-star classic, but. You know, I have it 4.5, 4.75 because I love this match a lot. But what did you think about the end here, Glenn?
I liked a lot of the stuff with Laparca getting the bandage on his head because I think the referee once and then when the doctor came out went through a great deal of effort to put this bandage around his head. And then he would go back into the match and get hit once and it would just fall off. Like there was one, I think the one that the actual doctor put on that wrapped around his foreheads a bunch of times, and then he got sent into one of the turnbuckles and it just popped off and flew away. And I was thinking, well, that's kind of a morbid souvenir for someone in the front row, huh?
Yeah. Can you imagine taking that home? That's disgusting.
Well, these are wrestling fans.
Well, maybe you can clone La Parka.
Whoa.
Oh, my God. We could have infinite La Parkas.
Oh, my God.
I think you just figured out the plot for Jurassic Park 5.
I was just going to say, I just thought of the best thing ever, Jurassic La Parka.
Yeah.
Fan fiction. Let's get on this, guys. A wrestling fan La Parka opens up a park of La Parkas. This is fucking brilliant. And of course, the La Parkas get out of control when somebody within the system turns on them, and you know, for his own purposes of maybe creating an evil La Parka army to rule the world, and then conflict ensues and hilarity, hopefully.
Wow. I would watch that.
And blood. Lots of blood.
If you don't mind, I gotta run off to the copyright office or wherever you go to legally protect your ideas.
Okay, completely understandable. Talk to you later.
The final thoughts on this match, Mark? The final fall?
I liked it. I liked how it kind of started off with like just vicious chops from La Parka that just like totally like knocked Wagner down to the ground for like a minute at a time, and then Wagner came back with him similarly. It really had the feel that they were both on their last legs. They were both bloody messes. They've been through so much. They can barely stand, but they hate each other so much that they just have to keep going. I was a little confused once again by the end, but like I said, this whole the revelation of the evil ref thing has made things make more sense, I guess. Or was this even an evil ref situation? I mean, sometimes it's hard to tell if it's an evil ref or it's just like
a very biased ref, maybe. I forgot to actually mention that. The point where they've been brawling throughout, they've been killing each other with chairs, and at one point, La Parka says, come here, we're going to punch each other in the face and see who the man is, which I thought was an amazing little moment there. And La Parka nails him down, and then Dr. Wagner Jr. stands up and is like, no, 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 I'm the man, and then he starts slapping him. That was cool. But continue on there, Mark.
Yeah, and then I guess my only confusion, I was confused by the ending a little bit at first, but now I kind of get it, the whole disqualification thing. I don't like the idea of an epic match like this ending with a disqualification or a screwy finish. I don't know if this is like the cap to their feud, but it felt like it during the match, and then to me it felt like that should have a definitive ending, but this almost seems like how La Parka wins matches. Like, this is just how it works. Like, he wins matches by, you know, a shady ref helping him out, which I guess maybe just plays into his asshole character too, but yeah, that's my biggest, I guess, critique. But I don't know, is that just kind of standard in this type of match, or
it's kind of LA Park's kind of a dick, mm-hmm. and Dr. Wagner Jr. is kind of a dick. So to get them to commit to matches and have clean finishes would be kind of difficult to do.
Oh, you mean in real life?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait, I thought Dr. Wagner was the face. Okay.
Yeah, that's why a Masters Mask match is probably never going to happen, because
right. And I had thought this was, because I kind of thought the end of that last match, they were talking about it so much that that's what I was going to see here. So I was like confused when like La Parka just walked out. I was like, oh wait, what's going on? And then they kind of like did a celebration with Dr. Wagner at the end, like this young chick, maybe it's his wife or something, or hooker, I don't know. She comes in the ring and celebrates with him, and I thought that was weird because he lost. But there's all this confetti in the ring, and they look like they won. And I don't know. I guess when there's no stakes or masks, it's you can celebrate because who cares?
He pinned him, so yeah, he kind of got a moral victory.
He probably got the moral victory, exactly, which I guess is like the perfect finish for two guys that don't really want to put anyone over. So one gets the real victory and one gets the moral one, and whatever.
Yeah.
I liked it. The match itself was epic. It definitely deserves the kudos you've been heaping upon it.
Yeah. This is the match I always tried to get everyone to watch. Like, if you don't like Lucha, watch this and see what you think. So, Glenn, you alluded to having some problems with this match, or were you just fooling around with this? What did you think of this overall?
Overall, I think it was pretty good. I wouldn't put it in the category of a great match. I wouldn't put it in the category of one of my favorite matches. That might just be because of my unfamiliarity with Lucha and the fact that it's not what I'm used to watching, and it's not what I really think about when I think of wrestling. Like, it's not really my speed, but for some of the La Parka dick spots, I think those carry through regardless of language or culture. and that really carries it for me. But otherwise, like, I didn't get enough of an emotional engagement with it, I guess.
Yeah,
I think, to really put it on that in that upper echelon.
Yeah, I think you missing the beer bottle spot might have put you over the edge.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah,
general confusion around the finish.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Screwy finishes. Like that was the main thing. Like going back for the Death Valley Driver 80s set, and you watch a bunch of stuff from the 80s, and there's like no clean finish anywhere. So you get kind of used to it after a while. Like, you guys don't I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but like, clean finishes is not a traditional wrestling thing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, like the 80s is just fuck finish after fuck finish. Like, even All Japan is just, no one can pin anyone. It's just count out and DQ and all this
definitely
bullshit.
At least on all the TV shows, it's, you know, go to your house show to see people fight.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But so that brings us to the end of set of matches. Well, maybe we'll just talk about what you think of LA Park now, Mark.
He's awesome. He's totally awesome. I already liked him in sort of a passive way, you know, just from my exposure to him in WCW. I just thought he was a quirky, interesting character. But seeing these matches, he's just so great. He's so unique and so great at conveying what an asshole he is and what a heel he is without, you know, it's not, maybe it's based on promos also in addition to this that I haven't seen. Obviously, I don't really speak Spanish, but, you know, just he doesn't need them anyway, because within the context of his matches, he's able to get that across quite effectively. And man, just some crazy violent brawls. And he does not have the body of a wrestler in any way. If you ever really take a look, he's kind of got a dad bod, and he's just like, and I just love how he comes across as just not even a wrestler, just like some asshole dressed up in a costume that just beats the shit out of people and like it bites their freaking bloody mask heads. I mean, it's just, he's just awesome. And yeah, I really enjoy it, La Parca, and we'll continue to seek out random matches of his. So I'm glad you opened our eyes a little bit more to the wonderful work of this fine man.
Yeah, and his son has recently started to show up on tape a bunch. El Hijo del LA Park. So he's around. I haven't really watched him, so I'm not sure if he's done.
I actually saw on YouTube there was a match that was LA Park and Hijo de LA Park. I didn't watch the match, but I saw that it was there. It's LA Park and Hijo del LA Park versus Dr. Wagner and Hijo del Wagner.
Yeah. So
wow.
So try saying that 10 times fast.
So the feud continues. So I'm not sure how his son is, but hopefully he carries on the tradition. I doubt it, because I think LA Park is kind of a one in a lifetime type wrestler. But
is it safe to presume that he'll be appearing on your top 100?
LA Park, yeah. The question is, how high can he go? But Glenn, what do you think of LA Park now?
I had no idea he was such a good heel.
Yeah.
I think that's what impressed me most about this. The general milieu of Lucha, I said, isn't really my thing. Some of these matches aren't really my thing, but LA Park as a heel did a lot of great work.
Awesome. It's good to hear. Good to hear. I was a little worried about the reactions, especially knowing how far they go in some of these matches. I was a little worried. But I'm glad you guys got through this and enjoyed it. So you got something out of it. So that makes me happy. Maybe we should do match of the night, because I think there might be actually some conflict on this. What did you think, Mark?
Oh, it's a tough one, because I really did like the first. I kind of like the first Messias match a lot. I think if I have to choose match of the night, I still would have to choose the second Dr. Wagner match, just because it just has that epic feel. But yeah, I'm gonna go with that one. but I loved every match I saw. Honestly, I thought they were really good. But I really specifically enjoyed that a lot of the plunder and stuff in the first Messias match. It had a really just a fun vibe to it, and I think that's the one where the finish is just LA Park just destroying him with the chair. So
yeah,
I like that one. I like that finish a lot too. So I'm gonna make that my runner up, just to give it a shout out. But the second Wagner Jr. was just epic, so I still have to give it the kudos.
Yeah, I like that. Glenn?
I think I'm a little torn, so for the sake of variety, I'll go with the Santo match.
Nice. Good to hear. How about spot of the night, the oh my god moment of the night? What was the oh my god moment of the night for you, Mark?
Well, I mean, there's two different kind of things here. A spot of the night might not be my oh my god moment. My oh my god, well, I can't believe I'm watching this, is definitely L.A. Park just licking the blood off his fingers. That's just like a new level of disgusting. So that was I wouldn't call it a spot per se. I mean, maybe it technically is. I think the coolest spot for me was the one where L.A. Park is showboating on the table and gets speared by Macias in the second Macias match, the one that I mistakenly thought was in the first one. So that's my spot of the night, but I'm going to say, oh my god, is licking his blood.
Glenn?
The moment, I will go for the burning shirt in the second Wagner match. And
when he's flipping him off.
Yes. When he's flipping him off and then hitting him with the chair with burnt parts of the shirt on it. It's, wow. As for actual spot, I really don't know. I might go with that spear by Wagner.
Yeah, the spear was pretty impressive. I think my favorite spot probably was the on top of the top turnbuckles and ramming the head into the post when it was super bloody. Like that was really cool. Well, it was really great at working a blood cut, because that's about as best as you can do. But yeah, that puts a wrap on LA Park. Maybe we'll come back and check out a few other people in the future on the Super Extreme Vault, and maybe even check out some other promotions like FMW or IWA Japan or something like that. But in the meantime, we'll be going back to ECW for what show is that, Glenn?
Living Dangerously.
Living Dangerously. Oh, yeah.
Aren't we though? Aren't we though?
We are. We are.
And I think everyone in that front row is living dangerously in those LA Park matches. So that puts a wrap here, and we'll be back next month with that ECW Living Dangerously 1999.